listening to Joe Barnes Online. We're talking about building businesses, creating an income for life, and having the freedom to work from anywhere in the world with passion and energy. For want of a better phrase, grabbing life by the proverbial balls. My name is Joe Barnes. Let's make it happen. Hello there, how you doing? Joe here, and welcome to today's episode. Now, today I'm speaking to a fantastic Aussie chap called Andrew Hackett, who hails from New South Wales, a fantastic part of Australia. And I've just recently read his book, Free From Fear. And so I wanted to get him on the podcast so that we could talk about how do we eliminate and get rid of fear, because fear really holds us back from achieving so much of what we want in life. Now, Andrew's got more than 20 years experience helping people think outside their limitations to move beyond their fears so that they can accomplish amazing things in their life, business and relationships. Now, before you think it's a bit woo-woo, it is a bit woo-woo, but how important is it for us to be able to move beyond and eliminate those fears so that we can really get out there and get what it is we want in life? Now, Andrew's also an author, as I said. I've read his book, Free From Fear, and he's also been signed up to a 5-book series deal with Holland House Publishing in New York. So he is spreading his message across the world. And in this episode, we discuss how you can eliminate or at least calm your fears down. We also have a chat about what to do if your expectations of life differ from your actual reality. And also, we have quite an interesting discussion over whether or not you're born with a single life purpose. And we did have slightly opposing views on that one. So it gets good. Also, you will learn why I've decided to call my ego Bob and pretend it's a minion. Now I've gotcha. So I hope that this episode inspires you to chase away any demons that are holding you back from achieving your goals in life. Enjoy. Hey there, Andrew. How are you doing? Great to talk to you. Thank you for joining me on the podcast.
G'day, Joe. Great to be here. I'm really excited to be talking with you today.
And you are based in one of my favourite countries in the world. You're over in good old Oz.
Yes, down on the New South Wales south coast in Australia, a beautiful part of the world. Very lucky.
And is the sun shining today?
Yes, we're coming right into spring at the moment, so yes, it's starting to warm up. We had quite a mild winter, which was my ideal winter, to be quite honest with you.
Oh gosh, we were over in Melbourne actually at the beginning of our holidays. Our summer holidays started in July for my daughter off school, and we were in Melbourne for about 3 weeks, and God, it was absolutely freezing down in Melbourne. It was so cold. Yeah. I was in jumpers and hoodies and really, really chilly down there.
Yeah, Melbourne would do that, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been really looking forward to speaking to you, and I'm very excited to share some of your messages with our listeners, because I think you've got a great story and you've got some great messages. And I think that fear, which is primarily what we're going to be talking about, is something that really does hold all of us back from achieving our true potentials a lot of the time. So I'd love it if you could start off, Andrew, with telling us a little bit about who you are and really what is your message to the world.
Yeah, thanks for asking, Joe. I'm a fairly simple sort of guy. I'm in my mid-40s, a father of 3 boys, and ultimately, a lot of what I'm trying to do is to try and get people to, first of all, recognize their fear-driven state. As a management consultant of some 20 years, I decided a number of years ago that the day job, as I call it, wasn't really adding any value to the world. You know, I just felt like I was just a bit of a paper shuffler. Around that time also, I was having a bit of an epiphany that I really needed to sort myself out, dealing with issues from my past, and I needed to move forward, if not for my sake or for the sake of my relationship, but also for the sake of my children. You know, I had 3 boys at that stage, you know, sort of 8, 9, 10, starting to move towards their teenage years, and I started to really wake up to who I was, and the fact that who I was wasn't really exciting me anymore. I wasn't really proud of who I was and I really wanted to be. So ultimately that sent me on what is effectively quite an extensive path of self-examination, philosophical exploration, and of course, extraordinary personal growth. And for me, that has led me to a place where I can actually really start to impact the lives of others in a very positive way to try and help them see, I call it perhaps the insanity of what a fear-driven existence is and what we all seem to experience nowadays. You know, we're all caught up in what I call the search for meaning dichotomy. You know, we have this search for meaning, yet we're living in a practical world and we're trying to make sense of it all, you know, and a lot of us, and certainly a lot of the people that come and seek my help, have sort of lost their way in their own life, lost their way about who they are. They've sort of lost their identity. And a lot of that has been driven by the need to pay bills, the need to live in a certain city, for instance, so that you can have a certain job, so that you can live in a way with a certain type of cars and certain style of house. You know, we have all of these expectations and it's all part of this big consumer-driven corporate world that we live in nowadays. And instead of us throwing the job away, instead of us, you know, selling the house and moving off to Hippieville, letting our hair grow long, and not that I think there's anything wrong with that, if anything, that's probably exactly what we all need to do. What I'm trying to encourage in people is to get them to realize that they can, in fact, make the changes they need to make in their life so they can find happiness in their life. And they don't need to throw it all away. What they need to do is they need to change their thoughts about it. Ultimately speaking, that's all I'm trying to do, is trying to get people to realize, first of all, what's going on for them, what's going on in their life that is making them so unhappy. And only after we have a bit of that realization, or we kind of wake up to our unconscious state, can we start to bring conscious awareness to it? And for me, that is the core of my message.
I've got, honestly, I don't even know where to start. I've got so many questions, it's crazy. But I guess my first one is the search for meaning dichotomy. Why do you think that this is so important to us as human beings? Why is it that we seem to be searching for a reason? I mean, why can't we just be?
Yeah, that's actually a beautiful question. And ultimately speaking, that is exactly what we should all be, is just be whoever we're supposed to be, you know, just live and allow life to live around us. I think part of the issue is, you know, we're born into a world, and I believe that we're all born into love. You know, we're all born into a pure state. And we learn fear over a period of time. You know, they talk about the fact that there's only two natural born fears, and that's the fear of loneliness and the fear of falling. And one, the fear of falling stops us from doing daft things like stepping off a cliff. So it helps us with our longevity of life. The other one about loneliness is actually all about the continuity of humanity. What I think, though, is that this search for meaning is, we are born with meaning. We are born with a bit of a plan. Now, it depends where your belief system sits. And all my work doesn't necessarily sit, you know, I'm, to use a fairly crude term, non-denominational. I don't like to sit within any particular type of belief structure, because the people that I help come from all different types of belief structures. But the one thing I do believe at my core is that we do come into this world with a purpose. The problem is, and I believe it starts around the age of three, and that's actually when, strangely enough, a lot of nightmares start to happen during the sleep cycle in the young child. We start to disconnect from who we truly are, what we were born to be, and we start to then be heavily influenced by our environment around us, the parents that are raising us, our siblings and things like that. And we start developing our belief structure at that age. When we start moving through into our teenage years, we start changing our beliefs again, albeit somewhat unconsciously. It ends up being a little less based on what our parents have to influence, and it becomes a little bit more based on our peers and the people we look up to. Then we move a little bit further on. We start thinking 18, 19, maybe early 20s, when we start thinking about moving out of home. By that stage, hopefully we're working, or at least we're at university, and our belief structure starts to change again. And that is more based on the people we work with, what we want to achieve in life, and the greater influence of the people that we look up to. And what happens at that point is our beliefs don't change. And we get to a particular point in our life. So for some people, it's sort of late 20s, early 30s. Some people, it's more into our 40s and 50s. And it all depends on the individual, their life circumstance and their life experience, depending on how quickly or slowly that happens. But we get to a point in our life, and we often crudely refer to this as our midlife crisis. And all that is it is a disjoint between what we want our life to be and what our life has become. Now, our life has become what our beliefs were. And the last time we really checked in with our beliefs and the last time we started formulating our beliefs was usually in our late teens, early 20s. But, of course, we're some 10, 15, 20, 25 years later. So you can imagine how much growth can happen and how much change can happen in an individual over that period of time. So we end up by being caught in this discourse between an out-of-date set of beliefs and a real desire and sometimes a more of a maturity and sometimes also more confidence in who we are and more acceptance of who we are. We start to realize that the choices we were making in our early 20s, late teens, actually are no longer valid. They're no longer of any influence on our life. However, they still are, because we're still in that career that we started in our early 20s. We're still often living in the same place that we were in our early 20s. And so we end up with this dichotomy happening, this tearing of two worlds, the world we want to live in and want to experience and we desire greatly, and the world we actually find ourselves in. So we get caught in this search for meaning, and it's that search that usually brings people to my door.
But I think as human beings, we tend to put an awful lot of pressure on ourselves as to who we think we should be. So we measure ourselves by certain status symbols like the house or the car or what our friends have got or how our mates live. And certainly nowadays with social media and people, you know, shining up their outer image and showing only that on social media, not actually the, you know, how they look first thing in the morning or, you know, the doubt, the arguments they might have with their other half or whatever. They only show the shiny side. And people are now measuring themselves against that. So yes, you know, their decisions or where they were X number of years ago may have brought them to where they are now, but now they're also measuring themselves against other people who seemingly are happier or have more or whatever, which I think we all know deep down isn't actually true, right? I mean, you know, people, we all know deep down that people shine what they put on social media. And yet, you know, as human beings, we'll still look at it or look at our mates with their flashy car or whatever and measure ourselves against that. I mean, why when we know deep down, do we still do that?
Yeah, look, that's an interesting point too, because a lot of us are, for want of a better phrase, we're judging our B-roll, our real life, with everybody else's final product. And the problem is they're not the same. We're not comparing apples for apples. We are comparing what is a very self-judgmental, egoic, fear-driven existence with this beautiful, shiny, glamorous, you know, rich and successful type of appearance that everybody puts on. And the interesting thing, though, is I find that humans, we are evolving in such a way that although we see that, you know, I'm on Instagram, you know, I'm on Facebook like everybody else, and, you know, I see a lot of these people who are trying to get their small business up and going, which I fully respect, but they're doing it in a way that lacks authenticity. And I believe that is the single biggest failure of small business in the modern world, is they're hiring some big fancy boat or they're hiring a Lamborghini or they're hiring a big fancy house to do, you know, film footage of, to give some impression about the fact that they are successful, hoping that people will see them as successful and want to be like them. The problem is our intuition kicks in. And I am a very strong believer of intuition. I run my whole business and, in fact, my entire life based on my intuition. And I encourage all of my clients to do the same. And the reason being is because the intuition picks up on the lack of authenticity in what is going on around us. We just know that something's not quite right. So only really, truly authentic people are the ones we can connect with, because it's part of the universal language. And if we are trying to connect with people that are not authentic, the relationship, the connection in itself isn't authentic, and we know and feel that. In the same way everybody, you know, feels when they walk into a room and they're not welcome, or they just, the energy in there is really wrong. You get a real feeling for that.
Yeah.
But you're right, the big issue is where we're judging our day-to-day existence, which we know intimately without makeup on and, you know, without having showered for the day, so to speak. We're doing that with and competing or reflecting on that when we're looking at images that are highly polished and highly manufactured. You know, I say embrace who you are. I say embrace your uniqueness, and more important, embrace authenticity in your relationships, because that's what the universe is going to give back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on that. And I think people do resonate with, I mean, it's one of the big things these days. I think it's kind of gone through a stage where everybody went for all the big shiny stuff, but now people are resonating with authenticity. I wonder if that's why some of these reality TV shows, which by the way aren't authentic, but they kind of give the impression of being authentic, and that's why people tend to enjoy them. But I've got a couple of questions on some of the things you've been saying. First of all, I'm going to make that my second question. First of all, you talked about how we we make these decisions, we have these values, whatever, when we're in our 20s or 30s, and then, you know, X number of years later, we find that actually as a person, we've changed, or our priorities have changed, but we're still living in the same circumstances that we were from the decisions we made when we were younger. So what do we do? What's the solution to that if we suddenly do find this disconnect in our thoughts from where we are to where we think we should be or where we want to be? What do we do?
Yeah, another great question, Joe. Look, the way I think about it is the first step to anything is always about complete, honest and transparent self-awareness. We need to be honest with ourselves. You know, too many people are in these relationships and society has told them that if you got married, you have to, you know, die married. You have to, you know, till death do us part. And so a lot of people end up caught in relationships or even in jobs that they decided when they were a lot younger, and they suddenly think, I don't have a choice about this. They genuinely believe they no longer have a choice about anything going on in their life. And, you know, I like to first of all remind them that we always have a choice. Even not making a choice about something is still a choice in its own right. And what, ultimately speaking, I like to get them to look at is try and take the veil off. Try and take this big veil that society has put over the top of us that sort of blind us from what's going on, and take a long, hard look at ourselves. And this is really difficult for a lot of people, because often we've been unconsciously walking around like zombies for, in some states, 20 or 30 years. So the first thing we must first of all do is recognize what is happening within us. Recognize why our life is unhappy. Recognize why our relationships are unhappy. If we can't recognize what's going on, we cannot fix the problem. Mm-hmm. We have to recognize it. I talk about a three-stage process, which is I crudely refer to as recognize, reflect, and resolve. And recognizing what's going on is absolutely the first step. We've got to look at ourselves. We've got to really try and peel away. And again, these layers are so thick and they've been there for such a long time. It is very, very difficult to walk away from a job you've been in for a long, or even a career or a line of work that you've been in for a very long time. But often, and I strongly believe this, the universe is intent on us knowing and understanding what our purpose is, because the universe needs us to fulfill our purpose, because our purpose is integral to ensuring that everything that needs to happen does happen. And if we are off course, I believe that the universe is constantly telling us, giving us ideas. They call them synchronicities, subtle suggestions, either intuitive or through the use of others, about what we should be doing in any given moment. Now, if we're not listening to that, I believe the volume gets turned up ever so gently each and every time until what happens, and some of us refer to this as a bit of a rock bottom, life becomes so painful, our current state of life, our current life experience becomes so painful that we're forced to change. Now, often that state of rock bottom, that moment when we're feeling really, really raw, really broken down, that is the perfect moment for us to take a long, hard look at ourselves and go, right now, if I'm in this situation and it is so desperate that I can't possibly continue,
okay,
that is the ultimate.
Okay, I have a question, though, about this purpose. Yep. What if it's the fact that you believe you have this one purpose in life, but you're not able to define that, that's making you unhappy in the first place? Because I'm a big believer that you don't necessarily have one single life's purpose because you change so much through your life. Yes. So you might have a purpose in your teens of passing your exams. You might have a purpose in your 20s of paying the rent. You might have a purpose in your 30s of raising a child. You might have a purpose in your 40s of whatever, you know, building a business. But that, you know, some people are born just knowing that they want to be a doctor or they want to be a pilot or they want to be an astronaut. But, you know, so many people don't really know, through me included, through their life at different stages, what their absolute one thing was going to be. And I'm a huge fan of just reinventing yourself to match your current circumstances and worldviews at that time. And surely that's got to lead to a bit more, taking the pressure off yourself a little bit and saying to yourself, you know what, maybe I don't have one massive big life's purpose. Maybe actually, you know, I can change and wax and wane as I grow and have different views and different priorities and all that kind of stuff. So what's your view on that?
Yeah, look, I love a couple of things that you've said there. First of all, you know, I believe when you're talking about having a purpose about, you know, going to university or having a purpose about doing this job or that job, to me, they're more, I know, to use a crude term, sub-purposes in my mind. They lead us to a certain point that helps us prepare for what our purpose is. You know, in the same way, I believe that everything that happens to us, even the tragedies in our life, are the key sculptures, chisels that help form us into the person we need to be able to realize that purpose. So Tony Robbins talks about, you know, when he was almost completely and utterly flat broke, it was the single moment that spurred him on to start searching for answers. You know, Wayne Dyer talks about his father being his greatest teacher that put him ultimately through his father's actions. You know, Wayne ended up in an orphanage, which taught him resilience, which was ultimately why he was here. For me, it was suffering and enduring the sexual abuse as a teenager, and what that led me then to do over my somewhat 20 years of unconsciousness that actually made me the person who I am. Now, the funny thing is a lot of people have this, I believe, misconception that their key purpose in life is something that you can just wake up one morning and decide upon. I think it's a little more fluid than that. You know, I realized a number of years ago and quite clearly what my purpose was. However, it also took me 4 or 5 years to clarify what that was. You know, I realized it started off with a bit of a yearning, this feeling deep inside that I'm some sort of superhero with no cause. And realizing and believing in my heart that life was supposed to be better than what I was experiencing. Now, there's a good reason for that, and that's because life is supposed to be better. And as life, I believe it's supposed to be better for all of us. What that yearning is doing is to try and get us to look around, trying us to recognize what's happened within us so we can then reflect on what we want in return. I believe there are a couple of key things that can help a person discover what their purpose is. But before we get to that, I just wanted to say again that, you know, finding your purpose, this is not something that you will find in a weekend retreat. You know, this is not something that you will just stumble across in a discussion with someone. You might find a synchronistic event that comes about from that that may lead to others, that may build on the overall discussion with yourself about what your purpose is. Absolutely. But, you know, Your purpose in itself is something that develops over a period of time. And the reason being is because I don't think the universe wants us to realize in too great a moment, you know, all of a sudden. I think the universe wants it all to develop over a period of time. So it is got a bit of thought and a bit of meaning, a bit of personal growth in there, and a bit of understanding about what that's all about. But getting back to the two key things that I think that are integral to anybody finding their key purpose in life, I believe that is, one, something that you are incredibly, something that you're good at. Analyze what is it about you that you are particularly good at. And that can, you need to look back over quite a period of time there. And I say you need to be really, really specific as well. Don't make a general statement because it won't actually help you narrow things down. And I also think you should try and couple it with something that you're very passionate about. Now, for me, the realization for me is I started to realize what I was passionate about. And what I'm passionate about is helping people achieve the best in their life, helping people get out of their unconscious state so that they can start with conscious awareness and what I call conscious connected choice. They can start actually achieving everything that is in their heart that they want to desire with their life. Because to me, that is ultimately why we're here, to experience and express life for whatever it is supposed to be. But, excuse me, but what I think we need to do is I needed to couple it with what I was particularly good at. Now, the problem was, is as a commercial management consultant for some 25 years, working in big business, I, strangely enough, thought that that was somehow linked into what my purpose of life was. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, I couldn't have been further from the truth. However, what I was particularly good at and what I have always been particularly good at, and it took me years of exploring to really narrow this down, is I am particularly good at taking very complex teachings, very complex situations, very complex explanations, and breaking it all down to into very, very simple forms so that anybody I come across, I can explain it to them easily. So what I then further explored was if I can grab fairly complex ideas, theories, you know, situations, and I can turn them into very simple things to try and help and educate people, then, and I coupled that with my passion, which is helping people, why not become a teacher? Why not teach people about how they can get from their unconscious state, awaken them to what their true purpose is and what they're here to do, and then help transform that purpose into something that is commercially viable? Because, and the reason why I say this, and this is not getting back to the money and the greed is good aspect, this is getting back to the fact that we live in a practical world. We all have bills to pay. We have mouths to feed. We have a roof to put over our head. We cannot ignore that unless we want to go and live in the forest like a bunch of hippies, and that's fine for everybody that wants to do that. But between you and me, camping never really was my thing. I'm more of a hotel type of guy. So I like a nice clean set of sheets, and I'm a bit soft in that regard.
Me too.
But we can't ignore the practicality in life. We can't ignore the fact that we need money to get by. So it doesn't stop us from helping people. We can help people for free. It doesn't stop us from doing a lot of things because we can do a lot of things for free. However, if we want to be truly committed to our purpose in life, we need to think of a way that we can create something commercial out of that so that then we can do it full time. And that was a really, really big realization for me and something that I've been building on for a number of years now.
I am trying to think where I want to go with this next, because I want to ask a bit more about purpose, but I also want to move more into fear and the ego as well. But before we move off of purpose, the only thing that worries me, Andrew, about people thinking I've got to have this one purpose in life is that it just... I worry that that will lead to unhappiness if people can't discover it. If they feel like they've got to spend years trying to look deep inside themselves to find their life purpose and they can't find it, they may not take action that is required right now to just lead a happy life, whether you can or you cannot discover what your one big thing is. Because maybe you just... you know, maybe you just don't have that one big thing. So surely in the meantime, should you just not be finding out what your purpose is for the next 6 months or year or 2 years or 5 years, so that at least you take some action towards being as happy as you can be? Because, you know, when I was 34 and had my daughter, my only purpose was in ensuring that I had enough money to feed myself and my daughter and pay the mortgage and buy clothes and all the rest of it. You know, I wasn't thinking, oh, I now need to go and change the world. My purpose was, you know, I've got to look after this small baby that's just come into the world, you know. And then later on in life, I have a different purpose. And then, do you see where I'm going? What scares me about the one purpose belief system is that people who struggle to find it will end up feeling less satisfied because they feel they should and they can't. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it does. And I think a lot of this is about us allowing, surrendering is another term that's used. To use a good old Beatles adage, we need to let things be. What I mean by all of that is, I think too many people can get a little stressed about not knowing what their purpose is. You know, they become aware of what the problem is, the fact that they're unhappy, the fact that their life isn't what they really wanted it to be. But, and they, you know, a lot of people, it's easy for them to determine, or at least to say to someone, you know, what they want their life to be. They want their life to be successful and free and financially secure and abundant, you know, all those wonderful words. But this purpose anxiety can happen, which is exactly where I think what you're talking about is we end up by getting anxious about not knowing what our purpose is. And I've met a number of people, you know, dozens in fact, that end up in this exact state. And I just try to say to them, just allow. You know, there's no finding in searching. You know, the destination doesn't actually arrive because you're searching for the destination. The destination arrives just because you just keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I often, to use your words, you know, the lack of action, you know, I just say to people, you know, what are you passionate about?
Yeah, because you talk in your book, Free from Fear, you talk about chopping the wood and carrying the water. Yes. And you say, you know, that is a really important part of the process. At the end of the day, you can think and you can, you know, cogitate and you can and have all these, this is who I am or this is who I want to be or whatever. But let's talk about chopping the wood and carrying the water, because how important is the action, you know, part of the whole process?
Yeah, it's absolutely vital. You know, without it, it's like any manifestation process, which is thought, statement and action. All of it is all about the action, every single last bit of it. You know, if you don't have the thought, nothing can happen. If you don't make the statement, nothing can happen. But if you don't do the action, absolutely nothing can happen. But actions are a whole range of different things. You can actually move towards your purpose in an unknowing way, or perhaps in an unconscious way, just by focusing on what you're good at, or just by focusing on what your purpose is. And the reason why I say that is because sometimes we don't really know, and I use the staircase analogy quite a lot. If you walk up a set of stairs, you often, you know, we do it all the time. We walk up a set of stairs when we don't know what's at the top of the stairs, do we? But it doesn't stop us from walking up the stairs.
Yep.
You know, it's like a spiral staircase. You can't see all of the stairs. You just have this underlying faith that the stairs are there. And, you know, what's the worst case that happened? You get halfway up the stairs and you realize there's no more stairs. So you walk back down again. The point of what I'm trying to make is when we start moving forward on action, the biggest thing that stops people is fear, because their logical mind says, I need to know what the 10 steps towards success is before I can start achieving success. And I say to them, no, you don't. You just need to know what the next step is at any point in time. So often we may not know what our purpose is, but if we're really passionate about something and we're particularly good at something and we try and marry the two of them, that in itself might lead us to think, well, you know what, why don't I give this a go? Or why don't I give that a go? You suddenly start seeing a couple of steps ahead of you. And yes, there may be, for a better sort of explanation, there may even be a couple of different staircases, a couple of different paths. Don't be afraid of taking the path. And, you know, because I believe that no matter what path you take, you always end up back on your true path if you just sort of allow. And this is why in my manifestation process, the thought, statement, action, I also add the fourth and most critical thing, which is surrender. Surrender to the process. Just allow it all to happen. Let it all go about your thing. Just go about your day and do what you're here to do and plod along. And that's why carrying the water and chopping the wood is very, very important, because we live in a practical world and we need to focus on practicality. We can't forget that. But if we just allow for things to happen and allow the universe to kind of provide, not all the answers, not the outcome, we have to make the outcome, that's what action's all about, but to provide the opportunity. And we need to be aware, we need to listen for those opportunities as they come about, because that helps guide us along the way.
Actually, I was talking to one of my other podcast guests, was a health and fitness guy, we were talking about how sometimes you may have a goal which you're not necessarily fully in control of, and so therefore what you need to do is focus on the process, yeah? So like, let's say that your goal was to lose 10 pounds, well, you can't always control that, because losing weight isn't a linear thing, you know, it can depend on you know, water, it can depend on all sorts of things, you know, the where the moon is and all that kind of stuff, whether your weight's going to be an X amount, you know, from one day to the next. And he was saying, but if you focus on the process, so you know that if you eat, you know, salads three times a day, if you drink 4 liters of water, if you eat fruit, if you don't eat processed foods, if you don't consume alcohol, if you don't eat sugar, you know, then you may not be able to completely control the end goal, but if you focus on the right processes, then your chances of success obviously are much greater. Yeah, because you're focusing on the stuff that you can control, which I think leads us nicely to talk about the ego, because you talk about the ego in your book, and obviously the ego is hugely attached to what creates fear, because as you say in your book, you know, the ego is like that voice inside our head telling us what we're not very good at and what we can't do, and yet we obviously need the ego to be able to drive us and you know, to have our goals and our dreams and all that kind of stuff, and you also talk about how we live in this fear-driven culture, which we really do. I was writing down for my own notes as well that these days, you know, it's like capitalism is greed gone mad. Terrorism is religion gone mad. The leaders of our governments are like lies gone mad. I mean, everything is a bit extreme and we're being fed all this stuff, and it's all going into our mind. It's fueling our mind. And that's kind of then leading to the stories that we tell ourselves, which is, of course, where the kind of the ego gets involved and this fear-driven culture, et cetera, et cetera. So I've gone off on one there a little bit, but if you could perhaps comment on that and talk to us about how the ego and fear are connected and what we need to do in order to overcome that.
No, that's okay. That's great. I like that analogy too, by the way. I think it's best for me to explain the core foundation of what I try to teach people, and that is that every thought, every feeling, and every choice we make is based on one of two things, and that is either love or fear. So every emotion we have, every life experience we have is based on either love or fear. Love being all the positive, happy, you know, honesty, peace, joy, happiness, all of that sort of stuff, all the good stuff is at their core construct built on love. And all of our negative experiences, hate, shame, anger, guilt, you know, all of those sorts of things, judgment, complaining, you name it, is all based on at their core construct based on fear. Now, what I try to get people to see, and it's just a different perspective, because I often find when people are really searching for answers, all they really are looking for is for someone to break it all down a little bit and kind of simplify it enough so that they can just sort of ruminate on it. And I say to them that, you know, the ego, and I talk about the ego in the Eckhart Tolle sense of the word, you know, not... I think all good business has a little bit of ego in it. I'm not talking about that sort of healthy aspect of the ego, because there is a very, very fine line. I'm talking about the ego, which is like the parrot that sits on your shoulder and just talks trash in your ear. I find the ego to be predominantly arrogant amongst the masculine set, the masculine stereotypes, like males, for instance, and tends to be more fear-driven in females. And what I mean by that is it's not that it's not fear-driven in males at all, because all negative things as their core construct are fear-driven, But arrogancy is fear-driven as well. You know, it's the beating of the chest to try and make yourself look bigger, you know, like the gorilla, to try and ward off other, you know, maybe suitable suitors, or to try and ward off other people that might be a threat to you. Whereas the female ego is slightly different again, where it's, you know, the parrot's always saying, you know, you look fat in that, or you're not pretty enough, or you're not capable enough, or nobody's actually listening to you, you know, and this happens all the time. What I try to do is to try and get people to see that, first of all, we are not those egoic thoughts that are in our head. It's the first realization we must learn to accept. We are not those egoic thoughts in our head. What we are, in fact, at our underlying base is the calm awareness that is listening to those thoughts. Now, the interesting thing with all of that is once we can start to try and break that down, and it takes a little bit of time to get used to it, you know, you need time to sort of digest this a little bit, because a lot of people, we're so used to this voice in our head. We all have it. You know, it's always there. But the voice in our head is not who we are. That is our ego talking to us. And our ego can only rule us, control us, you know, and us are its, you know, we are its host. It can only control us through fear. And the reason being is ego is in fact fear's foot soldier. So, you know, we incarnated onto this planet for one very, very good reason, and that is to experience the life we cannot experience when we're not in physicality. You know, irrespective of where your belief system is, whether the spiritual, whether you call it the spirit world or the, you know, heaven or paradise, you know, whatever that is to you, and there's certainly no judgment from me either way. When you're in that non-physical state, albeit between lives or however you want to call it, we end up by, you can only experience love. You can only experience the true unconditional love. We incarnate on this planet to experience physicality. And what comes with physicality is that love and fear dichotomy. It is everything that you can experience through love and everything that you can experience through fear, because you can't experience that in your non-physical state. So that's where the ego comes in. The ego is fear's practical application in the physical world. So some cultures have referred to, like the church talks about the Adam and Eve story. You know, the ego is the snake that gets into Eve's ear and gets her to reach for that apple and take a bite, which then corrupts the whole process of humanity, and you know everything goes to pot. So the interesting thing about that is we need to recognize that ego and how it plays out in our everyday life. We need to listen to it and allow it. We came here to experience it. It is not the big evil creature that, you know, we kind of think it might be. You know, what it is as much a part of life as everything else is. And we need to kind of embrace it. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we talk about the ego and its influence over us, because it is fear-driven, it can only do things that are fear-driven, fear-constructed. So one example I'll give you is honesty. Would you say honesty, Joe, is love-constructed or fear-constructed?
Love.
Right. Okay, great. Would you say dishonesty is love constructed or fear constructed?
Fear.
Okay, right. So, you know, and, you know, love being everything that's positive and fear being everything that's negative. If love is constructed of honesty, you know, sorry, honesty is constructed of love, and dishonesty is constructed of fear, and the ego can only do something constructed of fear, can the ego tell the truth? Can the ego be honest?
Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it?
No, that's right. And I say it can't, because the ego needs to control you through fear. It doesn't want to implement any constructs of love, because it makes itself irrelevant.
So what part of you is it then that's being honest? If the ego is the part that's being dishonest, which part of you is it that's being honest?
It's your soul. So the soul that lives within us. So the soul communicates through the heart, and the soul can only speak a language of love. And the soul, our intuition, our higher self, depends where your belief structure is again, our soul communicates in whispered tones, and only because you know, this, if the soul was loving, sorry, was yelling and screaming and carrying on, that's not really very loving, is it? And so the soul talks like that. So that's why the ego is constantly in our ear, and that's why the ego is also very loud, because the ego doesn't want us listening.
So how do we use it to our advantage? How do we turn it around and use it to our advantage? How do we, you know, get beyond the fear that the ego puts into us, and, you know, be able to go out and achieve the things we want to achieve that the ego is telling us that perhaps we're not good enough, or we're not worthy, or, you know, we're not young enough, or pretty enough, or experienced enough, or skilled enough, or whatever?
Well, okay, so the first thing, and this is, gets back to my recognize, reflect, and resolve process. So I talk about, first of all, we need to recognize the ego when it's appearing. Now, when I started to do this and follow this process very closely, I realized that I was recognizing my ego coming up some, you know, 1,000 times a day, maybe 10,000 times a day. Like, it was just non-stop. And at first I started to battle with the ego. I started getting frustrated with it and getting angry with it. And then I started to realize that wasn't helping, because it was only making it stronger. So what I started to do is started an alternative. And this gets back, I think it's a quote that's attributed to Albert Einstein. And to be quite honest, I'm not too sure whether it's his quote or not. He gets attributed to a lot of quotes nowadays, and I don't think people really check their sources. But he talks about the fact that you cannot change something with the same energy that created it. So if the ego is created with anger and frustration and judgment and stuff, using judgment to dispel it, to overcome it, is not going to work either. So I say love the ego. Recognize it. Offer it love. Talk to it. Say hi. And I, you know, I've got this little mantra. I say, hey, ego, thanks for dropping by. You know, I really don't need your help right at the moment. You know, I've got this. Thank you. You know, I love you. Have a great day. And it sounds a little crazy, perhaps.
It does sound a bit crazy, yeah.
Yeah, it does sound a bit crazy, that's right. But you see, by recognizing it within us, we start to realize how prevalent it is. And the more you recognize it, the more you're calling it to account. It's like if you've got the bully in the office and you call that bully to account, call them on their behavior, it quickly shuts them down. The ego is no different. The ego is just this internal bully that's had control for far too long. And it's about time we actually started to do something about it. Because on the other side of that, when you actually start to eradicate the ego and its constant control, what you actually start to do, you start removing fear from your life. It's the ego that is constantly implementing fear in our life. You see, and our corporate media, our government, all of it knows this. They know that the way our ego works, they know that our brain is mapped to see the fear side of things in 80% of all scenarios, because it's part of our fight and flight response. It's part of that caveman response that our makeup, you know, originated from. So they use these things to sell to us, to get us to buy into what's going on. And ultimately speaking, it's very, very clever and it really works. However, as soon as you start switching off the ego, and the ego stops influencing by adding fear into your everyday experience, suddenly your everyday experience opens up to constructs of love. You suddenly start feeling a little lighter. You start feeling a little happier. You know, I switched the news off. I haven't watched the news on the television. In fact, I must admit, I don't watch television anymore. I often get on the odd show and watch a little bit of Netflix and everything every now and then. But I don't watch mainstream television because it's all fear-driven broadcast.
Yeah.
You know, all the news and everything like that, they want you to see the fear. And when you suddenly switch all of that off, the ego suddenly doesn't have as much to influence with. It doesn't have as much tools at hand to actually influence you with. And you can start, it's amazing how your intuition opens up. And you can accelerate the process via a whole range of different means. Meditation is one. Simple meditation. We don't have to necessarily tie ourselves into a yogi knot and sit there silently floating 3 feet above the ground to be successful at it. It's just about being mindful about what's going on around us.
Yeah, just taking a bit of time, isn't it, out of the day. I wholly believe in that. Even if you just take 10 minutes where you go and you sit somewhere quietly, you know, with a cup of tea or something, and you just, you know, reinforce in your mind all the things that you're happy or grateful about, you know, and I find that so empowering.
Absolutely. Look, and people do it through different ways. I love going for a walk on the beach because I live on the beach here. Down the New South Wales South Coast. I often like go and grab my secateurs or my hedge trimmers and go and you know, tend some of the plants in my garden. You know, people like to go for walks, as I do too, or they go for a jog, or they go for a swim, or they, as you say, grab a cup of tea or even a glass of wine, and they go and step outside at the end of the day, and they just think all of that is mindful meditation in its own way. Mm. I just say let's choose to do it consciously. Because when that happens, when we quieten the mind, or more to the point, we start to quieten the ego and its constant carry on, what happens is we start actually being able to tap into and listen to the gentle whispers of our intuition, of our soul talking to us. And I've got to tell you, you could be on the longest staircase climbing as high as you possibly can to reach your goal. If you are listening to your soul, your soul and its intuition will provide opportunities that will streamline things so fast. You know, one example I've got with my book, my first book, Free From Fear, I'd been sending, you know, requests out to publishers for at least 12 months. Every week, a new publisher hoping to get some sort of response back. And in the end, I said, I've had enough of this. It doesn't look like this is going to happen. You know, what's going on with this? And, you know, my intuition told me, you know what, just send your book to a couple of friends that you trust and, you know, see what they've got to say about it, you know, because my ego was trying to tell me, Andrew, your book's no good. So I sent my book out to two friends that I know and trust who have also published books themselves. Say, well, you know, you guys are authors. What do you think of it? Anyway, the way the universe orchestrated it by just me listening to that one thing, and it wasn't send it out to a publisher, it wasn't try and force the matter, it was just kind of surrender to it and ask a couple of friends for their opinion. One of my friends, a beautiful lady who loved the book so much, she sent it on to her publisher, which was Holland House Publishing in New York, and they called me literally 3 days later and said, you know, we need to talk, we love your book, how do we get this to print? And again, you know, me and my ego was constantly sending stuff out to publishers, and it's all about taking action. I'm not saying don't take the action, because that's really important, because what that was doing is sending a really clear message, a really clear signal to the universe that, in fact, you know, that's what my intention was. I wanted to get this published. This is really important that this happens. But what it did is it opened up some other doors when, as soon as I surrendered to the process and listened, I then was able to listen to something that seemed very, you know, non-consequential. You know, it wasn't a big deal. Send it off to a friend of mine and ask for her opinion. As it turned out, it was the single biggest thing that fundamentally changed, certainly my publishing career, because it got my first book published, and Holland House Publishing have now signed me up for another 5-book series. So you can see the way the universe and our intuition works together. Yep. To try and influence our path. And if we're not listening to it, if we're not taking those moments of quiet reflection throughout the day, we can't listen to what's going on to get that guidance.
You almost need to look at it like those old cartoons where you had the little red devil on one shoulder and the little white angel on the other. Exactly. And, you know, one's your ego, the other one's your soul. And, you know, you're sort of having a little conversation with them both when you're... But before we go, Andrew, because we are running out of time here, I just want to talk about giving, because as I have got, you know, older in my life and you know, have become luckier and have managed to achieve so many of my goals, nothing makes me happier than knowing I've done something that's added value to somebody else's life. You know, and that's something I definitely wasn't thinking about when I was in my 20s. This is, you know, this is a new thing that has developed through my late 30s, 40s. And you do say in your book, you talk about giving money to others, signals to the universe that you're wealthy. You know, how important is that adding value? How important is that wanting to give back and contribute to the world?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question, and I'm glad we touched on that before we finished up. That exercise that you talked about is one of my little manifestation exercises where I would go and get $100 or a couple of $100 sometimes, break them up into 10s or 20s, and I'd find homeless people around the place and just, you know, give them $20. And to them, they feel like they've won the lotto, you know, really, because it puts food in their tummy for the day. Sometimes it might even get them a room for the night. But to me, you know, $20 here or there wasn't really a big deal. And what the way it made me feel was, honestly, you feel like Superman. You feel like you're making real change, and it's the simplest of gestures. It was like I had accumulated over many, many years like a storeroom just full of blankets. I ran a farm stay for a while, and I just had accumulated blankets somehow. And so I packed them all into the back of my truck, and I went out one night in a Canberra winter, which is a cold winter, below zero, and I was just started handing out these blankets to whoever I could find that I thought needed them. And honestly, you could have given these people $500. That blanket meant more to them than anything. You know, they were all freshly washed and they smelled good and they kept them warm. You know, that feeling that comes from giving, I believe, is so ingrained in all of us. Although some of us may have forgotten how it all feels because it's been a long time. And that's okay as well. No judgment from me. But that feeling is so ingrained in all of us. I believe that is a fundamental aspect of also helping us find our purpose. You know, not just focusing on what we're really passionate about and what we're particularly good at. But I believe that, you know, when you're in a in-between state, however you want to think about it, and you're thinking about mapping out your life, and, you know, before you incarnate, you say to yourself, what do I want my purpose to be in life? I believe that in all circumstances, that purpose would be about doing things for others, about giving to others in one form or another. And so I believe that when we truly do find our true purpose is about enabling others, about giving others life, about helping others. And I think if you can do that, if you can find it, doesn't matter what it is, it doesn't join a volunteer group, try and do little things like maybe giving out some money or finding some old tin can of food in the fridge and giving it to people as well. You know, just little things like that make the world a difference. And this is why I think when a lot of people become highly successful, they start to open their minds to the philanthropic aspect. You know, that's because they start to realize there is more value in honor and integrity than there is in money. And when you honor yourself, or when you honor someone else, you also honor yourself and you honor them. And I believe that is ultimately what we're all here to do. You know, my purpose is about enabling others. Yes, I've got bills to pay. Yes, I need to also chop the wood and carry the water like everybody else does because we live in a practical world. But, you know, what I'm passionate about, what I'm doing is actually enabling people. You know, they talk about a true leader in the world is not the one who leads. The true leader is the one who creates the most leaders. Mm. And that's ultimately what I'm trying to do. And I think we're all trying to do it in our own little way. I just think a lot of us have perhaps just lost our way a little bit. You know, we've allowed the ego to control us. That we've allowed what others are telling us to be our truth rather than finding and developing our own truth. And look, I just want to say, not all is lost. If you are in this situation where you are feeling lost, there are people out there to help you. You know, I am happy to help you. You know, even Joe is here to help you. We're all here to do it in our own special way. You just need to reach out and ask. And I believe that there are so many good people in the world that you will have no trouble finding someone to help you get back towards your path. You know, only you can decide what your purpose in life is. It's just people like myself and Joe, we can perhaps help you find it a little more, you know, a little faster.
Andrew, I really appreciate your time today, and I highly recommend people read your book, Free From Fear. I will be putting links, obviously, to where people can find you and get more information about you and everything under the podcast on my blog, on the show notes and everything. Do you have any parting thoughts that you want to say before we say cheerio?
Yeah. I understand your podcast is all about helping people with business and particularly small business. And I've just got, you know, two key things I'd like to say. If you're starting a business or you're trying to get your business off the ground, just remember your business is every part of who you are. And if you want your business to grow, you need to grow yourself. You need to put the time and effort into your own personal growth and development. To me, and everybody that I talk to and the successful people that I work with, every single one of them say the same. You know, you've got to do the work on yourself. And what I mean by that is you need to look at the mind stuff. Think about your ego. You know, do some research and about how your mind is working for you, and really try and understand and grasp that. Look after your body. You know, if your body is in a poor state, it will drag your mind down, and vice versa. They play off each other all the time. Poor mind behavioral patterns lead to poor dietary choices, and poor health helps us feel pretty rotten. But also don't forget about the spiritual side, the whole mind, body, and spirit. You need to delve into some of the areas that you don't fully understand and just surrender to them, just allow them to percolate a little bit. And I promise you, your business will start to look up. And the other very quick bit of advice I just wanted to say is do what you do best and let other people do the rest. Focus your time and energy on what you are trying to do. And if you're not good at digital marketing, find someone who is to help you. If you're not good at, you know, writing, find someone else who is good at it. Focus on what you're good at and outsource those things that you really isn't your bread and butter, because someone else will do it in half the cost and probably half the time than you will be able to. So just think about that when you're planning your strategies out. There are so many good people out there trying to do their very, very best at changing the world. There is no reason why you shouldn't be able to get their help for your business.
No, great advice, great advice. And I just want to end saying that I'm giving my ego a name. I'm calling it Bob.
Very good advice.
And next time...
I had an ego called Paul from a lady, and another lady, hers called Pete as well. So, yes, I think everybody names their ego when they start to recognise it. Look, it's good because then you can talk to it and offer it love. That's the real key, offer it love, because then it starts to get a little bit mushy and starts to disappear.
I don't know why I'm calling it a boy's name, but Bob just seems like a good name. It reminds me of the Minions. And so every time my ego talks to me now, I can see Bob the Minion talking to me, and I say, not today, Bob.
That's great, actually. That's a good visual as well, I think. And you know what? I think almost all the women I come across, and I, you know, probably 90% of the work I do is with ladies. They all name their ego after a male name. So I think you're right on the mark there.
Isn't that interesting? Now, it's isn't very... that? There's a whole another podcast subject altogether. But anyway. Thank you so much for your time today, Andrew. I'm sure the listeners have found it very valuable. And, I'll be putting links down so that people can find out more information and, get a little bit more of what you have to offer.
Thanks, Joe. I've had an absolute blast. I really appreciate you welcoming.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. To join in the conversation, please head over to joebarnesonline.com, where you can find links to podcasts, show notes, and sign up to download my free ebook, How to Build a Business You Can Run from Anywhere in the World. If you have a moment, please subscribe and quickly rate this podcast. I'm not sure where you're listening to this, but if you happen to be on iTunes, it literally takes a tenth of a second to hit the little stars, and your rating will ensure it gets out to more people and impacts as many as possible. Lastly, I'm super passionate about creating a movement of philanthropic investors, so please head over to joebarnesonline.com/microangel to find out more about how you can become a microangel and with just $25 impact thousands of women and children who desperately need our help. Thank you so much. I do hope you've enjoyed today's episode. See you on the next podcast, and in the meantime, get out there and make life happen.